Good morning, everybody. It is September 29th, 2021. This is the ADK Homeroom, your home away from homeroom. And I am your host, Frank. It has been a great week here up in the Adirondacks. The leaves are falling off the trees. They're getting a little crispy under our feet. I am starting to see more sweatshirts and fleeces showing up at soccer practice. The nip, the brisk, the cold is in the air. Starting to smell those fires, get that wood smoke smell going all around town. People's hearths, people's burn piles are going. And of course, that means that you can gather around the fire with your neighbors, with your friends. And that leads us to today's podcast. I was having one such chat yesterday before soccer practice, and my friend was saying to me, he said, he listened to yesterday's podcast, and he said, do you really think that the elites knew all of that and what they were doing? I wasn't actually planning on doing this part three, but then he said that he had that question, and then it sounded like I thought that this was some sort of conscious process by the elites and by the artists to build up this symbiotic relationship and this non-art market where the goods are really just positional goods. And my friend was saying that it sounded like this was some sort of collusion or conspiracy on the part of these guys, that they were deliberately forming this symbiotic relationship. One side lends wealth, the other side lends a concrete status marker that stores value. And then that this relationship was based on some sort of artistic omerta, right? A code of silence where each side promised not to discuss how bad the art was as art. They promised not to call shenanigans, not to call out the emperor for having no clothes. Well, the answer is, of course not. I don't think that they did this actually deliberately with forethought, planning out in 1890 how this all would go. No, I don't think that. But you don't have to understand something in order to use it. You don't have to have complete grasp. You just can use things. Sometimes kids don't understand grammar, but they pick up on it real quick. People don't have to understand markets, right? Whether they're traditional markets or whether they're this sort of Veblen pricing model, this model where it's a positional goods in the market. You don't have to necessarily understand that to have it happen. You don't understand a zipper, but you use one all the time. My apologies, I guess, if you are that one person in 100 out there who actually does know how a zipper works. But in fact, not only do I think that most of the elites have no idea that they're participating in this sort of market where things are positional goods and not arts goods, they're not doing art for art's sake. I don't think that they think that. I actually think that most of them truly believe that the art that they're buying is good. Right? They really actually think that there's some sort of high quality to this art. It's part of the psychology, right? If they believe that they're not just buying a medal, right? M-E-D-A-L to pin on their chest to show how great they are, something with no value on its own, but that everyone has agreed is important. It also has a lot of marginal value. When they believe that they're actually buying great art, then they get tons of psychological benefits. You see, nobody wants to buy themselves a medal that has no value in and of itself, perhaps, but they do want to support poor, struggling artists. They do want to be associated with cool, rich artists. They do want to feel like they have refined tastes that the masses don't. And that's enough. That's enough. You don't necessarily have to understand the repercussions and intricacies of it to make it work. The psychology, the driving forces are enough to make it happen. And in some cases, the psychology itself is valuable enough to to be a reason to participate in this market, right? It can be proof to them that these refined tastes can be somewhat a proof to some people, not everyone, but some people participating in the high-end art market, that they really do have more refined taste than the masses. And then maybe that makes them think that maybe they really do deserve, and they shouldn't feel guilty about the lifestyle that they're living while half the world lives in steel huts with corrugated roofs and no running water. It helps assuage their consciousness, their conscience, whether they admit it or not. But for whatever reason, once they have bought in, understanding or not, and I think most really don't understand, there's this inertia, right, that keeps it going. Like most lies, once you start running with them, you have to keep running with them. It's like that bus in speed. If you slow down, that thing is going to blow up. You can't suddenly come out and say, ooh, we've been fooled. And, you know, if they were to do that, which I don't even think they would consider for a second, I think that they really do believe it's great art. They've listened to the experts. They have said, oh, yes, these experts, this is the way a lot of people like to live. They don't question authority. They've listened to the artists themselves. Oh, the artists say this is great art. This must be great art. Who would know? Certainly an artist would know. And they go with the lie then. They don't even consider that it is a lie. And they have no incentive to challenge it, because if they did, then they not only do you have the psychological implications of admitting that you've been wrong, but you also are out millions of dollars, right? There is a rich literature of self-deception and self-delusion, by the way. One paper that you could start off with maybe is Von Hippel and Trivers, 2014. It's titled The Evolution and Psychology of Self-Deception. It has dozens of citations. And the basic idea is that it's an evolutionarily advantageous trait to be able to fool yourself. Self-delusion can really give you some advantages in life. The one reason is that it is easier to fool others if you have fooled yourself, because then you don't give yourself away. And it works in the animal kingdom. It works, well, humans are technically part of the animal kingdom, and technically correct is the best kind of correct. So I suppose I should say it works with animals and it works with humans. Perhaps even coalitional tribal instincts kick in. There's this snowball of faith. Everyone starts banding around everybody else, forming these coalitions, these tribes, and they believe in everyone else's deception. And that allows the elites to play this game without even realizing what they are doing. So that was this brief note. It's not the main podcast today. You should definitely go over and listen to that, The Greek Hero versus the Christian Hero. But I wanted to append one note to my two-part podcast from the previous 2 days, because I wanted to make it clear that I do not think that the elites and the artists set out intentionally, deliberately, to change things and set up this high-end art market different from the mass market, values different things, doesn't value art for art's sake. I do not think they deliberately went out and did that. I don't think that they have any idea. I don't think that they understand the forces at work here. I think that they're good people. Almost everybody is a good person at heart. I don't think there's a willful deception or fraud going on. I don't think they're cackling and laughing at people and thinking, oh, ho, ho, we fooled them. We've got all a monopoly in all the museums and all the academic ideas saying that this art is great. And really, ha, ha, it's crap. We're playing a joke on them. No, I don't think that at all. I think that people can and do, however, involuntarily self-deceive all the time. They see things that aren't. They see things not clearly, and I think that the motivation and the incentive from the artists, beginning, as I said, in the late 19th century, to twist their art and to move the standards of their art away from what they had been because they were threatened by the camera, because they were threatened by the phonograph, the moving away from what they had allowed them to create this new market, and they didn't necessarily understand the implications. I think it worked out far better than they could have imagined. In fact, it's been absolutely fantastic for the people that have participated in that market. The values go up and up and up and up. So kudos to them for following through on that. Really, it's up to us. It's up to the rest of us who are not participating in that to continue to not participate in that and to point out that it's a valid market. It's great. Go for it. But the value there is not in the art. It is in something else, status and position. So that's it for this note. Just wanted to make that clear that things can work and people can do things even if they do not understand what they're doing or how the mechanisms of that particular process. So go and check out the main podcast for today on the Greek Hero versus the Christian Hero. And I will see you soon. Tomorrow, I think we're going to be talking about the morality of mask mandates. See you then.